Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. You're here with Tim, Charlie, Andy, and Josh. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, where I think I caught just a little bit of the opening laughter.
Something about my blanket.
Yeah. Tim thinks it's too cold in the office. Yeah. Tim thinks it's too cold in the office.
Yes, yeah. That's why I want my blanket, so then I can look home.
All right. Josh, how are you doing? These Yahoos already talked.
I'm doing well.
Good. Great. How are we doing on final grades, gentlemen?
Done. I have one student who has a test to take, but they were at Nationals, so it's no big deal. Other than that, I'm done. But I was done last week, and it feels so good.
Yeah, I'm done too.
Me Josh, as well.
I'm done also. I have one student that I'm waiting on something, but
this is the day that is really exciting to professors. It's not the last day of class. It's not commencement. Those are exciting things. It's I have submitted my final grades. That's the day of reckoning.
The day of reckoning. That sounds darker, but also accurate.
You can make it the same day.
What do you mean?
The final day of classes, the final day of grades.
You turn it all in that day?
Well, that did happen for me this year, but normally it's not until tomorrow.
Usually I'm like last minute getting an email from, we won't name names, but there's only one registrar at Faith, being like, hey, Charlie, did you remember that grades are due today? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to send those right over, which means I didn't remember. Anyway. You guys ready to have a little opening discussion here?
Oh boy.
I'm not so really.
Are we ever ready?
Today's episode is kind of like a transition into the summer. And so we're going to do, before we talk about summer plans, summer books, we're going to just reflect a little bit on the year. So I have some reflection questions for us. So Tim, pick a number between 1 and 56.
1 and 56?
Yeah.
56.
It's just the number I have.
That's fantastic.
Number one.
Number one. Okay, so looking back on the year, what is one moment from this past year that you think you will still remember 5 years from now?
One moment from this last semester or year?
Everyone at the table may answer. So yeah, something that happened like this last school year that you think 5 years from now you're going to remember that moment. Nothing comes to my mind right away.
If it's not a moment, I have an answer. But I'm trying to think of a specific moment. Probably getting my final grades in early. That'd probably be something. But I think, like, overall, if there's ever a year where I have felt the most comfortable in the classroom understanding the real point of education, it's been this year. So the content is important. I've always thought it's not the primary thing. But to me this year, I think I've understood, or maybe I've just felt comfortable in, I am the curriculum. So that's not an arrogant statement, but education is you passing on what you have and shaping someone else with you in a sense. Yes, I have notes. Yes, I have research, but my classes are really my classes, and I could hand my notes to someone else, and it wouldn't be the same class. And I think I've understood that I just need to faithfully do that, and I'm content with that. So I think I'm not trying to be another teacher any longer. I'm not trying to match another standard. I'm trying to steward what God has given me. And I think this year, I think I felt very comfortable doing that.
I had a few students at the end of the year that just said some very kind things or wrote some very kind things. You know, as a teacher, sometimes you wonder, am I making much of a difference?
And
sometimes students express those things, and it's very, very encouraging. So I'm thankful to God for that.
So 5 years from now, I might remember how my hair started to fall out this year. And so I've started to be a little bit more intentional about resting. Mm. So that might be one. The other thing, really started to realize how there are people in this world who are seeking to lead my children away from the one true God. Hmm. And I've never thought that there would be people who would be deliberately, intentionally seeking to lead them away from God until this year. And so realizing that has given me a better vision of how to guide and direct my children, thinking through, oh, that is out there. And at some point, my children are going to be exposed to it. How can I love my children and guide them through that type of a trial? So that will probably be the one in 5 years I'll reflect back upon and be like, oh, that thing happened. So that'd be it, probably.
So I think of, I have three things. One, in the classroom, there was a moment in a classroom where we're working on what I would consider a skill, and you've seen students fail at that skill multiple times, and then the moment where you see them achieve the skill, and you, in your mind, you're like, oh, they got it. Like, that's there, awesome. They got it. That's that's super fun.
Yep.
Second moment I'll probably remember in 5 years is even just a few weeks ago, the NFL draft, where there's a tornado happening, and I turn around halfway between Ankeny and Grimes and drove to Tim's house. I'll probably remember that.
Amen.
That's a good memory.
It was a good memory.
And then this year with counseling adolescents, just the first year teaching that, there were a lot of fun moments in that class that I think I'll remember back to. So,
can I add one more? So I'm teaching a module this week, and there's one student in the module who, it's a Baptist history and beliefs module. And yesterday they were just like alive. And at one point they said, I had no idea this class would be so interesting. I mean, I'm elementary ed. I thought this was like a gen ed I'd have to get through, but I am just, and like all day, they're just question, question, question. I know. I know. Josh, doesn't that warm your soul? So, but seeing how it's shaping them, I'll probably remember that.
All right, Josh, pick another number.
Two.
These are thematically arranged, so they might be in a similar vein. We can pass on this one if we want to. Number two, what part of the year surprised you the most, either in the classroom or outside of the classroom? Most surprising moment of the year.
Let's skip it. Let me pick another one.
Okay, pick another one.
We each get three
vetoes. 15.
15. Did anything go wrong in class that ended up becoming memorable in a good way? Something that went wrong in class that became memorable in a good way.
In years past, there's been some, but I...
Yeah, I can't... I black those things out. Like, when things don't go well...
Can I... So, back in the day, I can share a historic event, but not this year.
So, there is actually... The thing that comes to my mind is in counseling adolescents, and I was putting PowerPoints together or Google Slides, and... At first, it's just like, just get it on the stupid slide and get it up there. But then over time, you start trying to customize them, and you're like adding like the animations and the transitions. And the first class period where I added those transitions, I like had scrolled the timer of like the speed all the way to like the slow end. So imagine you're like clicking through a PowerPoint and you click the slide and it's like a fade in, and it's just like super slow. And it's like, and because they're animated, so the first one, there's nothing on it. So then you have to click it again, and the first line is just super slow. And I made the comment at the time, like, ah, I need to fix that. And then I just continually kept forgetting, like, legitimately. So I would copy and then add the new text, but it would keep all the same animation. It took me, like, weeks to actually change that. It's like every Tuesday and Thursday that the super slow, and that was really funny in the moment, but became fun over time. But anyway, that's what came to my mind.
I don't have one this year, but I'll just share one from a historic past. There was one year I was talking about in Intro to Bible Study, we talk about, I started off doing Bibliology Light. So we talk about what is general revelation, what is special revelation, because I want to lay the foundation that if the Bible is a special revelation, we need to treat it accordingly. And so in the special revelation section, I'm just talking about where you see God in the Bible, and it's something about the appearances of God. And so we're talking about Moses and the burning bush. And I argue that I think I'm arguing that it's like a divine experience or a divine a manifestation. And I said, how do you know that? And I said, because God told Moses to take off your feet because you're standing on holy ground. And I didn't know what I said. Everybody starts laughing. And I'm like, what? And then no one wants to say it. And finally, one of the Mape sisters is like, well, Mr. Stearns, you said take off your feet. And I was like, oh, I meant sandals. But it just had a really funny picture. So yeah. I usually misspeak, and that usually is a pretty normal thing in a Stearns class.
I can't think of anything. Sorry.
I can't really either.
It's, we don't really make a lot of mistakes. Is that a correct assumption?
I make a bunch, but I think I'm making up for all of you.
All right, Andy, pick another number.
Well, we make mistakes. Do that, but then they often don't turn into something profitable. So if you had true. Just the mistake part, that is true. Then
so I was going to pick 13 because that's my favorite number, but I it seems like that's going to be in the same vein. Is it in the same vein?
It is.
Okay. Yeah,
try to go in like the 20 to 40. Well, I was going to say,
I'll just double it. No, I'll do 46 because that's my age. I am an old man.
So from this year, so I think...
Mr. 45.
So the verb here doesn't like give you the object, but I think the idea is like a lesson or something that changed in you throughout the year. So what are you hoping to carry into next year? So something that you got this year that you want to take into future years. You kind of already said something about that.
That's what I would say. I think I understand now. That you got to get through the curriculum, yes, you got to educate them and then all that knowledge, but you are the curriculum and you're shaping people in Christlikeness and godliness. And so it's your class. It doesn't have to look identical every year. You do that. I would say that's part of it.
I would hope that over my time here, I've learned more about just working well with people, being patient, being kind, trying to be, you know, be humble and things like that. And so just trying to serve people well. I don't do it perfectly. I don't do it well even, but trying to carry that forward and continue to develop and grow in that area.
I thought of another one if you're still thinking, Tim. Just answer the question. So sometimes a student will come up and ask a question that's very obvious or they should know it from the syllabus. And I'll sort of answer it by being like, well, where could you find that? And I'm trying to guide them to be more responsible. But I think I found that sometimes you just need to be like, oh, that's in the syllabus and it's here on this page. And you just let them connect those dots later. That the times I've tried to be cute about it or a little bit like sarcastic to teach them something, it doesn't really land well in the past. And I think this year I've just tried to gently answer the question. I think that's been good. So I hope I carry that forward in the future.
Do you have anything?
As much as lies within me to live at peace with all men. I think that would be a good step for this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have anything that comes straight to mind for that one. But
I'll say one more.
Go for it. I have two more questions that'll be really interesting.
Ooh. But this is tagging off what Tim said. I think we've talked about this in the past.
As opposed to our questions.
Thank you, Josh.
But this is going back to one of our former professors. And I think I've always had this, but try to hit a home run every time. Like, really try to do your dead level best. And don't worry about other things that are happening, either in your institution, in your world, in the world at large. Maybe there's a war, maybe the Strait of Hormuz, maybe there's something at the church, maybe something's happening with this. But like when you walk in the classroom, do your dead level best to help educate those students in the Lord. I think that's something I want to carry on in the future.
All right. So with four professors at the table, and we often talk about our unique disciplines while we podcast, if the four of us had to co-teach one class based on this year's conversations, so our podcasting, what would it be called? If the four of us were co-professors of a class based on our conversations from the year, what would our course be called?
Something to do with the affections. That's what I'm thinking.
Reading great books. Not the great books, but reading great books.
Okay.
Any thoughts over there?
Decrystallizing things.
I was hoping someone would bring Song of Solomon into it.
That was so good.
Yeah, I'd be like, reading good books and having good friends and how to interpret the Song of Solomon.
That's so good. Thank you, friends. Thank
101. You. Throw it, tag a 101 on at the end of
that. That was great.
All right, and then here's my last one. So you can apply this to a moment, a student, or anything in the classroom. But give an imaginary award to a moment, a student, or something that happened in your teaching. So you have to pick the thing and then name the award. So give an imaginary award to a moment or student from the year.
You like drive me out of my comfort zone on so many levels, Charlie. Do you know how much creativity that takes?
Is that the award that you're giving to me, or what are we doing here?
Like I said, I'm complaining. That's what I'm doing here. Anyway, now you guys go ahead and give me some time to think.
I'm going to hand out the Reed Meyer Come At Me Award.
What?
Because in honors classes, Reed would just make a claim, and he'd be like, bring it on.
Are you serious?
He wouldn't say that because he's humble.
Sure.
But he would.
Oh.
There were several times in the honors program where he would make a claim that, you know, got some other people's brows furrowed, and they would then just start interacting with him, and he would handle it really, really well. So the Reed Meyer Come At Me Award, Reed, if you're listening, well done.
That's so good.
Can I'll pivot off of that. A student in one of my classes that did that I thought pretty well was Daniel Gums. And he would, on a couple of occasions, he would come up and give a question. But then there were even times from class discussion that his peers would be like, Daniel wants to say something. And he'd be kind of like, all right, guys. But I thought he did that same thing. He'd get good conversation going. I will give the award for always being late to Grayson Hewitt.
That's so good.
It is. I'm trying to break him of it.
Horrendous.
Hopefully this public shame helps.
Grayson, do better.
He did improve at times, but not all the times.
I will give the award to the student who loves Folgers coffee the most and brought it most often to class, to Jacob Schutz. He would literally show up in Western Civ with Folgers and be like, Mr. Stearns, I got my Folgers. Would you like some? And I'm like, that's trash.
That is unequivocally worse.
I know.
Than being late to class.
It is. I would pick late to
class. No, it's not.
Well, yeah, I can't actually say that.
Being late to class
is worse.
That's
what my heart says. My head might agree with you, but my heart says
follow your heart, Charlie.
Any other awards, Tim?
I feel like I should give some kind of an award to Ethan Hartog because he did such a good job in class, but
it's not those kind of awards,
Tim. Exactly. That's the problem.
The endowing look at of how imaginary awards is not a skill of yours, Tim.
No, it's not. So yes. There we go.
I would give the award to saying what everyone's thinking but doesn't say because you probably shouldn't say it out loud to Josh Ann. Because many times everybody's thinking, what? And he's like, are you saying this, Professor Stearns? And it's just like right across the line. And I'm like, actually, you're not wrong. So, Josh Ann, you get the award for saying what everyone's thinking, but no one's saying it out loud.
Yes. All right. So that was just some fun questions to reflect on the year. Now it's time to do the other thing, which kind of gets us into the other stuff.
Books and business.
Let's talk about some books. Or the umbrella for the rest of the episode is summer. So summer books that we are planning to read, summer plans, summer whatever, all of
summer business.
Summer business.
And business.
And there's no rhyme or reason to this. So anybody can go first. I'll go first. So I have a lot of discipleship works that I need to read through. So I'm currently tasked with reviewing literature. And not necessarily every discipleship work, because that is a mountain that I would not be able to climb, but trying to go through different time periods. And so even on previous episodes, we're looking at church fathers, just trying to go through as much as possible to try and get a better mental grasp on how did people look to form Christ in other people at different times? So that's kind of my main project for the summer in a lot of different, that's pretty much all I'll be reading. So, yeah.
So I'm looking at a couple of textbooks that I might change textbooks. So one of my projects for the summer is to look at Mastering Biblical Hebrew by Helen. I don't know how to say her last name. It's like French, D-A-L-L-A-I-R-E. Dallaire. That sounds wonderfully French, so we'll go with it.
Dallaire, like Sertiange.
Sure. And so that may become a new first-year Hebrew grammar for me. And then my Hebrew exegesis class.
No more Kittel and Hoffer?
And
That's right, yeah.
Kittel and Hoffer, wrong.
This would be a replacement. It'd be very hard for me to change. We'll see. But it's a living languages approach. Mm. I wanted to incorporate more living languages. So even if I don't adopt a textbook, I might take some of the components from it. And then textbook. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you want to explain living languages approach to our listener?
So you read the language to the people. So it's like, Nikara Bedrvit. Let's read some Hebrew. So you say, Nikara Bedrvit, and then the students all know what that means, but they don't know what in the world it is. Oh, it's a Nephal perfect from Kara. You know, they don't know any of that. They just are saying it. Then when you get to that grammatical component, they have something that corresponds to it already because they've been speaking it all the time. So a common one is Boker Tov, which just means good morning. But when you once you get to the adjectives, if they've been saying Boker Tov all the time, They know what it is. They're there. Correct. So incorporating living languages techniques into my Hebrew grammar class.
If we're really lenient on run-ons, that was like 2.5 sentences.
That's fine. I'm cool with that.
Okay, so my second book is A Primer of Biblical Hebrew Poetry by David Emanuel. So for my Hebrew exegesis class, my favorite Hebrew poetry book is Wilfred Watson's Classical Hebrew Poetry, but it's like 50 years old. And it's got, he uses Ugaritic all the time. And I'm like, I tell the students, just skip that section. So, you know, could we have something that would be a little bit easier? Yeah. Like we don't need to deal with the Ugaritic.
Check.
So this book has a high probability of being really good. And so I may be switching to this for my Hebrew exegesis class. So that's one of my projects is to evaluate those two classes and potentially update textbooks.
I have a couple things to say that aren't related to summer, and I'm going to do it right now. First of all, I read a paper this afternoon by Hannah Franklin, and in it she was arguing about reasons Christians should read pagan literature, and she quoted Basil of Caesarea. Oh. And she didn't know about that. She did that on her own because the podcast hasn't aired
no
yet.
No way.
Who was that?
Hannah Franklin.
Oh, man.
Wow. She's in Baptist history this
week. Is she a student of yours?
What a bummer that she failed the class, right? Oh, I mean, no. I don't know that. I'm totally joking.
No, so I thought that was really interesting that she found that very essay that you were, or section of his works that you were talking about, and she incorporated that into her paper. So good job, Hannah. Second thing, do you guys know, so today when we're recording is May 12th, 2026. Do you guys know what happened on May 11th, 1926? So 100 years ago yesterday?
Oh, goodness.
No.
Can you give us a theme?
Stock market crash. I think that was 2 years later.
The Cubs won their only World Series?
No, that was 1906.
Yeah, it was way earlier.
It's a meeting of great significance between two people.
Was it a World War-related thing?
No, May 11th, 2020.
May 11th, 2020, 1926.
Was it American?
C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien met for the first time to get together.
May 11th, 1926.
Yep.
Josh, pulling the C.S. Lewis factoid out. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and I can't take credit for it. I was listening to a podcast and they referenced it. So, but I thought that's something that...
That's so cool.
Yeah.
What podcast?
I would prefer not to say.
The technical term is...
Redacted. Check.
You can just... Why don't you just say something and I'll beep it out.
You guys are horrendous.
That's fantastic.
Is it something like Balls of Pop John?
It's a conservative political commentary podcast, but I just don't want to say it.
No, that's okay.
I have all kinds of opinions out there. as far as my summer plans go, I'm going to be reading quite a bit of philosophy to get ready for another honors program course in the fall, but I am also moving. So I'll be getting ready to head north to Minnesota and to pursue a different role there. So that's the big item on our agenda for this summer.
So what are you doing up in Minnesota?
I will be the administrator of Fourth Baptist Christian School.
That, I think you're going to do really well at that. I'm very happy for it. I mean, we're bummed to lose you down here, but dude, I just think you're going to do really well. So yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
That makes one of us.
You really are Dr. Puddleglum. You just have no confidence in yourself.
No, I'm joking, but thank you. That's kind of you.
Yeah.
I'm going to be preparing a adult Sunday school class, or we call it Bible training at our church. And I'm going to be using that as an opportunity to work through my Christian experience class and tighten it up and kind of revamp it. So I'll be doing that this summer, Charlie. I'll try to keep in contact with you. Well, my plan is we can have totally different, we can have different classes as long as they have the same objectives.
Yeah.
So I was just going to like carry down the road. And then after I get a ways down the road, show you what I've got and see what we, if we want to do anything, but I'm going to use this as an opportunity to revamp parts of it. And then also it's on the doctrine of salvation and sanctification. And so I think that could be something useful to talk about in the local church. So I think it'd be good for Bible training. So I'll be doing that. And then I'm going to be speaking at Springboard, which is the 9th grade class in the mornings at junior high camp at IRBC. And so I'm speaking one day on why Christians can trust the Bible. So I'll have to prep something on that. And then I'm going to be prepping for the men's retreat. I'm not the speaker, but I'm doing one of the breakout sessions this fall. And I'll probably be in Proverbs because that's
men's
part of
revive.
The theme. Yep. Yeah, the men's revive. I can't remember who this, I think maybe that, I don't want to say the speakers because I can't remember for sure, but they're in Proverbs.
I think I'm doing a workshop for that too.
Okay, and I'm in
That'll
Proverbs.
Be fun.
Yeah, so I'm super excited. But and it's if it's Proverbs.
Okay. People need to come
you,
to
Josh,
men's revive.
Josh, you doing any workshops at men's revive?
Not that I know of.
Good. It makes me feel better about myself.
Hey, it's just the language, guys.
I know. If they want to talk about literature, they know who to call.
Team language. When I first started working here, we were going to do a ping pong tournament, and we were going to be team language and take on the students, and we bought ping pong paddles and played ping pong like 3 times, and then life just went totally upside down. Anyways, we also used to play Halo over our lunches for like 4 times, and then that also died.
So. Yes,
Team Halo.
I am doing a workshop.
Oh, that's cool.
For Men's Revive as well. I forgot about it until you mentioned it.
Next time we do a contest on the podcast,
yes,
we'll have to. It'll be like team language versus team literature.
Oh yes, oh yes, oh that's.
Hey, can you imagine? Could we have like a summer camp,
squirrel,
with themes like that?
Language. Squirrel.
Oh yeah.
Instead of like cereal, you know, your team is Fruity Pebbles. It's like you're the Greek writers of the 3rd century. Ooh.
Yes. Oh yes.
That'd be a good. Sweet camp.
That'd be a really good camp.
All right, where are we at?
Try to pitch that, Charlie.
Kleos.
Yes, Kleos.
Hey, there you go.
Ah, yes.
What are your summer plans, Charlie?
Thank you. What am I doing this summer?
I make a pretty good co-host. Good. Thank you.
I was trying to think of how to move us along. That was wonderful.
Let's just restart the podcast right now. Andy, you take it away. See, there's a little part of me that would love that trope of right now. Replaying our intro music and then having you say, welcome to the Thinglings podcast. All right, here's what we're doing. Anyway, my summer, I really don't have any plans right now, other than probably the next academic docket item is finishing my doctoral program, which that's like a 2-year maybe escapade at this point. So we'll see. Yeah, trying to move forward on that.
We're here to cheer you on. Get her done. Get her done. Get her done.
I think I have all of the coursework finished. But I don't know how all of the other professors will be submitting their final grades. So we'll wait and see. But that's pretty much the summer, other than just normal stuff. Might take some trips. Pretty basic. I do have I have multiple spreadsheets of which I've mentioned before I have a poetry spreadsheet, like classic works of poetry that I haven't read that I need to read. I have like a classics, like classic literature that I haven't read that I need to read. And so I really need to, with the free, the leisure time to do that correctly. And something I have been thinking about as we've gone through leisure and you get to the summer and you, I've got free time, really cultivating a desire that to do reading, not as an exercise of work. So to enjoy the challenging of your mind for no work-based purpose. So like if I'm reading it for a class, that's not leisure. If I'm reading it for sermon preparation, that's not leisure. But to have time to do those things for just the sake of doing them. And so I want to do that. I want to just do that. So that's my plan for the summer, is to liege.
I feel at rest.
Well, also rest, but...
Rest and leisure.
Rest and leisure, yes.
Are you done? You're done?
Yeah, keep circling.
Okay, so I am going to be working on... I'm presenting at ETS in the fall, so I'll be reading for work, kind of, but... I like doing this because it's like, this is thinking work. So it is still leisure.
There's overlapping categories.
Correct. So I got two new books. One is Landscapes of the Song of Songs, Poetry and Place by Elaine James. What?
Well, they're, you know, keep going.
And then second, I have Sacred Marriages, which is edited by a couple of people that I don't know how to say their names. And this one I picked up because it discusses directly the divine human metaphor, sexual metaphor from Sumer to early Christianity. So I don't know if you remember, that was my discoursologizing paper that I presented back at ETS, which I have not sent into any journals yet. And so I intend to be incorporating this and a few other sources into that paper and then sending it off. So as far as academics, I'm going to be interacting with these two books. And then in academics, I'm going to be studying emotions. So I have a few books on emotions. One is The History of Emotions by Jan Plamper. This is an introduction. I know nothing about it, but I'm going to be getting more familiar with it. This one really interests me. A History of Emotion in Western Music. This is by Spitzer, Michael Spitzer. He's a pretty... well-known individual when it comes to affections, emotions, and passions. So Thomas Dixon wrote From Passions to Emotions, and I think we've talked about that book on the podcast already, and I have that one too. That'll be part of this entire conversation. But next spring, Amos Glover and I are going to be co-teaching a Bible training hour on the emotions.
Oh, yeah.
So passions, affections, emotions, we're putting together a lesson.
At church.
Yep. So those are a couple of research topics for the summer, and those are a few of the books that are connected to that.
As far as pleasure reading, I'll probably do some reading in C.S. Lewis or Tolkien and just refresh on some of those things. It's been a long time. So it's probably what I'll plan to do. Work that in every once in a while when I have some leisure time.
Where do you think you would start?
Well, I've never read The Pilgrim's Regress. Thought about maybe taking that on, but also the Ransom trilogy, since we talk about it
too much.
Enough.
A lot.
So I was looking something up in one of the books that I was going to talk about, but did you say you're going to read Lewis this summer? Or just his fiction?
Probably just fiction.
Okay.
I said Tolkien as well.
So. Oh, okay. If you wanted some nonfiction, Surprised by Joy by Lewis is really, really good. That's one of my favorites. So, for my reading this summer, I'm working on Leisure, the Basis of Culture, since everybody here is reading it, and I'm very much enjoying it. I went into the bookstore to pick up some copies of another book, and I found this little guy, Fear is Not a Sin, It's a Call to Action by Ed Welch. Looked so intriguing, and I'm a big Ed Welch fan. So it's super small, so I can blast through that this summer. And then a shout out to Marcus Baltich. So this is a really cool moment. This one I might remember, Charlie, going back to our earlier questions. Abby, so Evan has trumpet lessons on Mondays at 4:30 at Luke Treiber's house. And so Melissa will bring Abby to my office. She spends 30 minutes with Dad. Melissa drops Evan off, and then she usually hits a Costco run, and then I go pick up Evan, and it's kind of a way that we can all hang out. And so Abby shows up, and she loves to play chess in Dad's office, but one thing she loves more than anything else in the entire universe is swinging on swings. And so 2 times ago, she saw that new swing pagoda inside of all the buildings. She's like, Dad, can we do that next time I come? I'm like, sure. So she shows up last week, and she's like, can we go, Dad? I'm like, yeah, there's just students out there, and I don't know who they are. I can't tell from a distance. She's like, it's okay. I don't mind. I brought a book. And I'm like, okay. So I don't know who the students are, and maybe they're all having a serious conversation. I'm like, all right, me and Abby are going. So we walk out, and, well, it's Jeremiah Murphy. It's Benjamin Murphy. He's back. He's way healthier. It's so good to see him back. Marcus Baltich, Esau Marks. Who am I forgetting? Oh, and the other Jeremiah Murphy. So the two Murphy boys, Baltich and Marks. And so we take a swing, and I've got my book, and she's got her book, and she starts reading, but we're all chatting. And so I just said, hey, what are you guys reading? And we had a lovely conversation impromptu about reading. And I asked Marcus what he was reading. And he said he's reading Scholarship, 2 Convocation Addresses on University Life by Abraham Kuyper. And I'm halfway through. This book is a gem. So I'd like to read a couple quotes, but that's my reading. I'm going to finish this summer. But these are addresses. So convocation made me think it was graduation. But this first one is at the beginning of a school year. And it's titled Scholastica 1, The Secret of Genuine Study. The other one, Scholastica 2, is The Goal of Genuine Study, which I have not read that yet. And I'm only halfway through this first one. Now, as he starts walking into this address, he starts talking about you're a student and you go home right now. So right now our students are all going home. We're about to take the summer off and we're going to leash. But what happens is you get in the middle of the summer and eventually you're like, man, I want to hit the books. I want to get back. And so he says, your busy lifestyle is exactly the opposite. Or he says, our friend Bruin the Bear busies himself in the summer and goes to sleep when winter approaches. But your lifestyle is exactly the opposite. You take it easy in the summer, but when the sky rises and the thermometer sinks, you enter your true element. And so he goes on to talk about the university. He says, let there be a tremor of noble intentions in your hearts as you begin this new school year. He says, let us resume our task with manly courage and Christian sense. And in case difficulties await us, let us begin not with presumption, but with humility. So then he goes on to talk about the nature of study. And he says, he just says a lot of really good quotable lines. A university student does not go by the sound of a word, and an old specter does not frighten him. The word scholastica, you detect, is at the root of the word schola, which you understand immediately is the vita scholastica, which is the life of the school that has nothing to do with disputations of old scholastics. Yet even you do not reach deep enough for its meaning. Schola is not a school of learning. Schola is the res republica literarium, the entire republic of letters. That distinctive sphere in society which indeed centers on the university yet pervades the country with young men who thirst after knowledge and with men learning to illumine our towns and villages like bright stars. So it's really great. If you love education, you're going to like it. He cites Proverbs 2 as like the point of learning. But then he talks about the falsification of the university, a huge trouble and a huge problem. He says, young men, there are this high and holy conception of a university was soon falsified. Young men whose object was not the study itself, nevertheless coveted the privileges attached to the order of the learned and began to penetrate our sacred garden like veritable parasites. So here are men who are coming to university not for the goal of learning, but for the accolades you get when you have said you have been learned. So then he talks about these guys are like Philistines. He says, it's a man of the town.
This, horrendous.
Oh, it is horrendous.
Philistines?
Oh, yeah.
But it's true. Oh. Just remember George.
Oh, yeah. George from Georgia. So he talks about this gang of students who are now in the university that don't actually care about learning. And so what do they do in the university town? He says, especially when the order of the scholars still had external privileges with which they could, with impunity, defy the constables during the nightly raids, or shop signs and doorbells, and when students paid no import duty on his wine, so this is all the benefits of being a student, then privilege, as everywhere else, so here worked its evil effect. Not studying, but creating a nuisance in public, and carousing, and drinking their buddies under the table, became the base occupation in which students sought their honor. And of course, from their student days, this false pride accompanied them into life. Because they had once attended a university, they thought they could forever look down with contempt on all those who had never gone to university. The holy laurels of learning fell into the mire, and the renegades' mugs were wreathed in vines of wild creepers. And he goes on to talk about how the problem in the university is this. There's like stages of the fall. He says the first stage caused the academy to forfeit its freedom. The second stage set it in opposition to God. And the third stage lowered it to the level of studying to pass exams. And I was like, look at that. So he's just, the whole thing sings with actual education. He says, those young men who supposedly are devoting themselves to academic studies, but who have actually only one goal in mind, to once and for all, and as quickly and cheaply as possible, to be done with bookish learning. They are parasites who come in our order to pursue success, but whose parched lips have never tasted one draught of the holy grail of scholarship. They are not looking for silver, and they do not search for hidden gems, hidden gold in the mine of scholarship. Their only goal is to acquire a steady position and a guaranteed salary. Do you now see why I want to talk about Scholastica? Now, that's as far as it got. I'm like, oh man, he's writing this in 1889, and he could have written it today with people who just want to get a degree. So, very interesting. Sorry to quote such a lengthy amount of it, but I felt like it sung with what we think about education.
Proverbs chapter 2. You can see the homage to it right in there.
Yeah, I really liked how he was using that. Mm-hmm.
All right, any other thoughts about summer before we go to the end of the thing here? Are you looking at your clock?
I have a pile of fun readings. My fun read this summer is going to be Leonardo da Vinci, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, you always do a fun read. I forgot
Last year I did Napoleon.
Yeah.
So
was the summer before that you read the massive book about the Israelite guy?
Yeah, Chaim Weizmann.
Chaim Weizmann.
So Da Vinci this year. And then I've just got some other ones like Courage by Rigney and Letting Go. It's a book about letting go of family members who are abandoning God. So that one's by Dave Harvey. So got a few books, more fun ones that I'm hoping to work through. And then we're reading Worship and Song as a Family by Scott Annual. So that was my last stage. I'm done.
Friend of the podcast.
That's right.
Annual.
I'm looking forward to thinking more about Baptist history this week. I know that's this week, but man, we had a really interesting discussion. In Baptist history, there's a guy in the General Baptist in England who ended up becoming Christologically a heretic. And the General Baptists didn't kick him out. They let him stay. And what ended up is he kind of ended up mutating the constituency. So I'm just looking forward to this week with more discussions. I asked the students, I said, what do we do if someone in a, like in the Southern Baptist, they had this happen with Crawford Toy and they tried to keep him in longer. James Boyce didn't want to kick him out. And so they took him from Hebrew, where he took the JDEP theory, and they moved him into Greek, and he still kept talking about it. So since we're in a class on local church, I said, what do we do if this happens in our church? Like, what if it's a person? And then we talked about, well, with a person, you're going to try to shepherd them and this and that. And I said, what happens if it's a pastor? And like uniformly, everyone's like, you kick them out. Like, they got us quit. They have to resign. I said, what if you're that pastor? And we all agreed, like, you've got to do the right thing that has integrity. You got to resign. So it's been really interesting hearing all the discussions. We talked about that. We've talked about how do you know which doctrines are important and not. It's really interesting how you can look in history and the issues we deal with today are almost all dealt with historically. So I think summer-wise, I'm really interested in talking about this and then taking those kinds of thoughts into Sunday school. Okay, let's have a final meditation in God's Word. I have a question for you guys. All of you have been involved in, well, Josh, you have been involved in athletics and you've had to train. Charlie, you regularly train in the gymnasium. Tim, you train in the mind, but you've also done athletic stuff. So
I went to the gym last night.
Whoa. Well done. So when you think of training,
you know, two times a year or something like that.
Hey, way to go, Tim. So when you think of training, give me some ideas of what training represents in any of those areas. What does it mean to train? What are some characteristics of good training?
Good form. So okay, as you're exercising, you want to make sure you're doing things correctly.
Okay.
And then you want to push yourself beyond what your natural expectation or ability you think that it might be.
Okay.
So progression is what he's describing.
Yep. Okay.
That's the big fancy word I was after. Thank you.
I would say consistency.
Okay.
So when, particularly in relationship to cycling, you just maybe don't feel like being out there, but you just get out there and just focusing on doing what you can today is going to help you be a little bit more, a little stronger for the next time.
Okay.
So more than two times a year?
Tim, I was going to say it if you didn't.
So the first word that popped into my mind was repetition.
Sure.
Yep. So you're going to do a thing more than once, mm-hmm, more than twice.
So this summer, I'm planning on working out with my sons in the gym more regularly. Nice. Not so much for me, but for them, they're of the age where they can actually start bulking up and stuff. And so, I'm doing that with them. So the goal is to do it 2 to 3 times a week, but really, I don't know how much I'm going to be doing. I'm going to basically teaching them.
Well, they say that higher muscle mass just contributes to lowering all cause mortality. Like, the higher muscle you have, the better. So that is a good thing. Okay. So when I think of training, I think of exertion. I think that, especially in weights, if you're doing repetitions and they're not very challenging, I don't know that it's not valuable, but the point is to push yourself further than you normally would go, or there's going to be some sort of a strain when I think of it. So in Baptist history this week, what we do is we go through 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, and Titus, and we just read a chapter here and there to try to coordinate everything. So today we got through chapter 4, and we had a really interesting discussion in chapter 4, verse 6 and 7 and 8. So I'm just going to read those, and this is what I want to meditate on. Paul has given a bunch of instructions and talked about reading the public word and having the right character and holding the faith with a clear conscience. And he says this, verse 6 of chapter 4, if you put these things before the brothers, you will be a good servant of Christ Jesus, being trained in the words of the faith and of the good doctrine that you have followed. Have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths. Rather, train yourself for godliness. And then if you're not sure what he means by that, he gives an illustration from the physical world. Verse 8 says, for while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. Now, what was interesting is I have a student who just completed Greek this year, and as we were going through this, he said, well, it's interesting, if you're going to be godly, it's going to require training. It's not going to be a passive, you don't do anything sort of a situation. I do know the Spirit produces it. I'm not denying that. But Paul seems to indicate there is a part of you that's going to have to exert effort in growing in godliness. So I asked him to look up the Greek word for fun, and the Greek word is gymnazo, which if I pronounce that slightly differently, I would say gymnazo, which is gymnasium. That's where we get our word gymnasium. It means a training center. So Paul is using an illustration tying it to bodily training. Well, in his day, what would Greek bodily training have looked like? Athletics, self-denial, pushing yourself when you don't want to, doing what you know you should do, even though you don't feel like it, having a goal in mind. There's lots about training here that I think would be worth considering. Now, does that mean that godliness is all a matter of self-effort? No, I don't think so. The Spirit produces that in our life. And if you don't walk in the Spirit, you're not going to become godly. But he is saying, be trained in the words of the faith and the good doctrine, and to train yourself for godliness. So, at the very minimum, I would say this. No Christian becomes godly by accident. There's an on-purpose-ness or nature to your becoming godly. So, how are you training yourself to become godly? Listener, we could go down the route of finding lots of ways to think about that, but perhaps this is what I want us to just leave our episode with. Do you assume that passively and accidentally you're just going to become a godly Christian? Friend, that's not what the Bible teaches. There is a focus, there is a following, there is an obedience, there is a pursuit. There is a walking in the Spirit where we have agency and we are responsible. What are you doing to put yourself in the places that the Bible would describe where you're going to grow in godliness? Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.